This podcast is brought to you with limited interruption by Rudy Luther Toyota. Whether looking for an exciting brand new Toyota, a certified pre-owned vehicle, or getting quality routine maintenance and service for your vehicle, Rudy Luther Toyota is the place to go. Rudy Luther Toyota, the southeast corner of 394 and 169 in Golden Valley.
It's the Matt McNeil Show for your Thursday. Matt and Brett here today. Brett, I'm chuckling because I just saw this. Scott Jensen, the witch doctor. Which doctor is he? Is he the doctor that's, you know, for Crazy Town or like an actual doctor? I don't know. Which doctor is going to show up? He put out this tweet. Exonerated for the fourth time. Haters don't want me to be governor, but most Minnesotans do. Whoa. Wow, you're punching out of your weight class there, buddy.
What's he doing using the term haters? What is he, Donald Trump?
Most. What's the term he's using? Most.
Well, and that too. Yeah.
Most. I think you think some. Yeah. Some Minnesotans want you to be governor. Most is not even close to the right term. I mean, there's a reason why Michael Broadcorp is absolutely trying to dismantle you, because he realizes that if you are the nominee, the Republicans are going to get slaughtered next year in the election. So, and here he is. He's saying, there's no other way. I'm for health freedom, so are Minnesotans. I'm not anti-vax. I'm not into cheese. Oh, now he's starting his big transformation. Where did you ever get the idea I was anti-vax? Well, didn't you basically sign on to a court to block COVID-19 vaccinations for 12 to 15-year-olds, regardless of whether the parents wanted to get the child vaccinated? That seems to be anti-vax to me. Just, dude, going me crazy. But still, when you factor in the fact, did you see the story? I posted this on social media. Minnesota Reformer had a little blurb piece this morning on the new majority leader in the Senate, Miller. And you know, interesting little fluff piece. And he was, and Melissa Franson, Senator Franson, the new minority leader for the DFL, said that he was the only Republican that called after her car accident to make sure she was okay. Kind of just this. And I said, wait a second here. Paul Gazelka, the Senate leader, you know, he's the majority leader, but he's also the leader of the Senate. He's in charge of the Senate. Paul Gazelka never once called Melissa Franson to see if she was okay after her car accident. Not once. You didn't call her once? Wow. So good. The great and whittling down of choices you've done, Republicans. The guy that could care less, I mean, about anyone on the other side of the aisle. And once again, that's not the first time. Remember when he didn't tell the entire Democratic Party that there was a super spreader event going through their own party? Yeah, a hoot. But, you know, not only that, but now you got Dr. Jensen, the witch doctor. Which doctor are you today? Well, now he's trying to... My conviction stands. Vaccine equals personal choice. I was never anti-vax. I was just always, it was a personal choice. I think vaccines are great. Well, he didn't say that. But I guarantee you, if he becomes a GOP nominee, oh, he'll be screaming that. I think vaccines are wonderful. Whoever got the idea I didn't like vaccines? Dude, you got so much video on you. Ugh, God. And I mean, don't get me wrong, the DFL might sit there and say, hey, if we use all this video that's really condemning of him, we'll look like the bad guy. So maybe we'll try to take him out on his trunk highway policy. You know, geez, I could see that happening. But there you go. You don't make me laugh like that right before a show. Doc, what are you doing? 952-946-6205. A lot to get today. Sven Sundgaard joining us at 5:30. We got to talk to him a little bit about weather. This morning, Brett, I went to the grocery store. It's my usual Thursday, you know, peruse the groceries. And I did find a Surrender Humans. Did you see this one that I found in regards to the Pocky, PAQUI, One Chip Challenge?
I have not seen that, no.
Okay, so... It's a skull box thing that is, and it comes with a warning. So this might be your first thing, and maybe this is not something you should be eating too much of. The Pocky One Chip Challenge is an extremely spicy tortilla chip made with the Carolina Reaper pepper. Please educate the store employees on the intensity of this product. The One Chip Challenge is not intended for anyone sensitive to spicy foods, allergic to peppers, nightshades, or capsicum. Anyone who is pregnant or has any medical conditions, keep out of the reach of children, wash hands after eating. Side effects may include general discomfort, sweating, nausea, or vomiting. The entire package includes one chip. And so you're supposed to eat the one chip. Now, did I buy the chip? I've had people ask, did you get the chip? Of course not. You know why? This is not about flavor or some of the things. It's about basically pain. This is why I made it a Surrender Humans. And it is that basically this is people in a boardroom saying, how do we get people to pay us to punch them right in the crotch? You know, and that's what it is. And hey, I got an idea. So they're going to be in real a lot of pain, and they're going to pay to be in this pain. Well, sign me up. It's the dentist from Little Shop of Horrors business. That's what that is. I did not buy this. Would you do that? Would you eat one individual Carolina? That's why they're getting away with it, I think, is they're saying, well, it's just one chip. All you have to do is just one chip. They're not selling them in like a bag.
Sounds like a very good deal. I'd pass.
I got to imagine that. That would be painful. I imagine that'd be painful. And to a point, I'm like, okay, why are we putting this out there? Okay, and then again, you know, we got people, we sell fireworks in grocery stores now. So I guess it's, you know, the cat's out of the bag. But, you know, this is one of those things where you eat this thing. If you do not wash your hand, can you imagine the pain if you like rubbed your eye after? Oh my God. And they must have, you know, a full warning on the inside saying we absolve ourselves, you know, if by eating this, by biting into this, you have absolved our company of any responsibility to this. But then again, I guess we could say, hey, anti-vaxxers, I'm going to guess these things are great at stopping COVID, so you just have to jam one or two right up your caboose. Oh, God. No, don't do that.
It's going to take off now.
Don't do that. Oh, they're not. It's not going to be the only thing that takes off if some of these people start jamming them up their backsides. Trust me. Think Wile E. Coyote on a rocket. Holy God. Ah! That's all. Don't do that, okay? I am mocking you. I am not actually giving out medical advice, okay? Get vaccinated. That's what I always say. But if you are in your neighborhood and you see that conservative neighbor of yours with his MAGA hat, with tears running down his face and maybe his pants around his ankles, screaming as he runs down the street, I think you know what just happened. He just took the one chip challenge. Do not give these people any ideas, because let's just face it, if they're to the point where they're poisoning themselves with horse dewormer, I could see myself becoming the, hey, there was this guy in Minneapolis who said we should do this. I was joking. Do you got that on tape there, Brett?
I actually didn't record that part. Okay. I think I only have the part where it says, damn it. Take it.
So. Damn it.
Posting that on YouTube, on Facebook, on Twitter.
Do not, for God's sakes, Trumpers, do not take the one chip challenge up the old backside, okay? That is not what it's designed to do. I don't know what the hell it's designed to do. I don't think it's designed to be taken down the mouth, if you want to know the truth. But I can tell you right now, it ain't going to be a good day if you basically say to yourself, I'm going to make this into a suppository.
Just been posted to YouTube in all caps. No. Matt McNeil finds cure for COVID.
No, I did not. I got a cure for a glum day for all your neighbors, but getting taken to the hospital, what are you in for? Well, funny story. I took the one chip challenge and, well, I lost. Don't do this. No. I have got it on good authority that taking the one chip challenge and putting it up your is not going to cure your or keep you safe from COVID. It's not. It might, you know, it might do some serious damage, I would guess. So you don't want to do that. Don't do that. I realized, I mean, I said it, and then I realized, I said, I can't say this. You people are nutsoid. If I say this, one of you is going to say, hey, he said to do it. I know. No, no. Don't do this. Don't do this. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Brett, get on the phone with legal, okay? Let's get you know, our legal, Philbert is our legal expert, our guy that keeps us safe.
I was thinking Jack Rice on that one, maybe.
No, I don't think Jack Rice wants any piece of this. See if Philbert, the station in-house guy, is he's around, and we'll have to check with him on my culpability on joking. It's a joke. Don't do it. Do not do it. It was comedy. We make jokes here. Have you heard the show? We're not making any sense. 952-946-6205. Actually, I got a nice little compliment yesterday from a conservative friend of mine, a very conservative friend of mine, who frankly does not like my show, doesn't listen, or at least I didn't think he listened. He sent me a note last night, and it was basically, Matt, I still do not like your show, okay? But I've been listening to you for about 4 weeks now because you are basically the only talk show host in town talking about COVID. That no one else on a daily basis is bringing this up, is talking about it, going over the numbers. And he said yesterday, what was it, 31 people died yesterday? 31 people was the total of people listed as passed away yesterday on the COVID numbers. And I think that that hit him. I think that that number hit him. And he's like, when you're at that point where 31 people die and it's not even a blip on the radar on most news outlets, that's a bad sign. So he has been listening to us. He's been, and I appreciate that. And now you want to know the truth is, I know you're not going to agree with me on things. We can disagree on policy. We can talk Twins all day long. We can talk Wild all day long. We can talk how pretty some of the colors. Have you seen the colors outside? My goodness, the trees have been popping like crazy this week. It's looking gorgeous out there. We can talk about how great Minnesota is as a place to live. And I'm not expecting you necessarily, if you're on the complete polar opposite of me politically, to like what I say on this station per se. But I do appreciate the fact that you're being honest and you say, well, you're the only one talking about this. So thank you. I do appreciate that. Which leads us back into the COVID update for today, coronavirus update for your Thursday. Thursday's COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health includes 2,874 new cases, 13 newly reported deaths, all of them occurring in September. The state's death toll now is 8,153 since the start of the pandemic. As of September 27th, the state reported that 3,398,906 people have received at least one dose of the COVID-19 vaccine. 3,227,882 people have completed the vaccine series. Through September 29th, the number of people with COVID-19 hospitalized in Minnesota was 789, down from the 800 reported on Wednesday. Of those hospitalized, 207 people are in intensive care. 582 people are in general hospital care. The intensive care, the ICU numbers actually are up because I think that was 204 yesterday. It's 207 today. The 2,874 positive results on Thursday were from 47,044 completed tests, creating a positivity rate of 6.11%. The Minnesota test positivity rate over the past 7 days is 7.36%. Which once again has been, you know, that's not where it should be. 5% is what they want, and it's getting definitely a lot higher there. I want to give Bring Me the News has got an excellent map out right now. Percentage of number of available ICU beds available in each region, and that are there. The regions where the hospitals are largest, of course, in the Twin Cities, there are only 8 ICU beds available right now, staffed ICU beds available in the Twin Cities metro area. That's 1.3% of all ICU beds in the region. So in the Twin Cities right now, we have room for 8 ICU patients. 8. That's car wrecks. That's heart attacks. 8. That's it. Because of idiots who are unvaccinated, who then get sick, and all of a sudden, the same medicine that they said doesn't work, all of a sudden is, save me! And so, that's what's happening. Idiots who are unvaccinated are taking up all the ICU beds. And people are dying in some states because of this. Idaho, Alaska, Hawaii, Texas, Florida. People were dying, are dying in those states because they have to ration care now because too many idiots of the unvaccinated basically are taking up too many ICU beds. Ugh. Olmsted, the southeastern part of the state where Rochester and Mayo Clinic are at, only 9 ICU beds are available. That's 4.1% of the total inventory. Up on the Iron Range and in Duluth, 5 ICU beds are available, 4.9%. In St. Cloud area, 8 ICU beds are available. That's 7.5%. In the very northwestern part of the state, it's 10.3%. So 3 beds are available. There's just not that many beds up there. But, you know, they still have 10% of their beds available. You have down in the very south central part of the state, three beds are available. That's 13% of their beds. And then in the very western part, west central part, there's 8 beds. That's 40% of their inventory. And in the southeastern part of the state, there's 7 beds, which is 33% of their inventory. I got to say this right now. I think the Twin Cities metro area has got to stop taking everyone else's ICU patients. I mean, are we at that point? This map kind of leads me to believe we're at that point where the Twin Cities might just sort of say, we got to protect the people that live in the Twin Cities. And, you know, God forbid a large accident happen out in rural Minnesota where all of a sudden a bunch of ICU beds are taken up. But at the same time, I can tell you the pound for pound, the likelihood that 8 ICU beds are going to be in need tonight in Minneapolis, St. Paul is probably pretty high. I mean, heart attacks, strokes, medical emergencies, car accidents, and I'm not even getting to COVID patients. It's a bad deal, man. And it's a bad deal because you idiot, unvaccinated fools are basically, you're basically killing the rest of us with your stupidity. Just disturbing. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. We'll take a break. Coming back. As a matter of fact, just the question I'll put out for the rest of this hour. You're more than welcome to chime in at any point. Do you think we should start rationing healthcare in Minnesota? I know some people are absolutely. But I mean, really, I want you to say this. Are you at the point where if you have 1 ICU bed available and the first person through the door is an unvaccinated person and then 10 seconds after that, a vaccinated person comes in, you skip past the unvaccinated person, you put the vaccinated person in the ICU and you just say the unvaccinated guy, good luck, good luck. Are we at that point now where we say as a tough love measure to the unvaccinated, you didn't think medicine worked before. I don't know why all of a sudden medicine's going to work for you now. Good luck at home. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. By the way, I have gotten someone chiming in. Adina Debbie. Hiya there.
Hi there. How are you doing?
In regards to the one chip challenge, which is a one chip sold in a box with a ton of warnings that this thing can basically really, really hurt you, it's got Carolina Reaper pepper on the chip. Don't do it, Matt McNeil Show. My friends did it and streamed the anguish. He barfed and she made it, but I hurt for her. She was sort of paralyzed, crying, and tried to describe the sensation. Then ice cream, learned from their ordeal. Oh, trust me, I'm not doing it. If you think I grabbed like 6 of them and chucked them in the cart, you're wrong. I did not do that. But I will say this. I think there's going to be a lot of people that try it. And no matter what you hear on radio stations, do not, repeat, do not, if you are an anti-vaxxer, if you're a Trump fan trying to find alternative medications for coronavirus, we have heard from good authority, you do not want to put that in your nether regions. It will not stop coronavirus. What kind of idiot would suggest that? I was joking. It was a joke. Don't do it. Don't. No, don't. For God's sakes, people. If it says, don't have this if you're pregnant, that should be your warning that you probably don't want this even if you're not pregnant. This is going to F you up. I mean, that's why don't you just call it that? F you up. He's having a... Brett's in there eating a bowl of the things right now. Got some dip to go with that? Looks tasty.
That's all you need. A little dip and you're covered.
Crunch, crunch. Well, Brett's just run frantically up to the bathroom. Well, while he's gone, let's do some more of the Minnesota coronavirus update. It is... We talked on Monday. If you get the chance, go back to listen to the Kristen Ehrsman interview. She's with Minnesota Department of Health, and she was making the comment on the schools that the school numbers are incredibly disturbing right now, that the numbers that are coming in, especially from school districts without mask mandates, it is getting, it is rough out there. The number of COVID-19 cases among Minnesota's K-12 students and staff members has reached the highest level it's been at any point during the pandemic. The latest weekly COVID-19 update from the Minnesota Department of Health shows an additional 2,248 cases of the virus in K-12 buildings, of which 1,918 are among students, 330 are among staff. The past week has also seen an additional 10 school staff members and 9 students hospitalized with the virus, 1 staffer and 1 student in the ICU. In the week between September 12th and 18th, cases increased 160% among students compared to the week before, suggesting exponential growth of cases in schools, which in turn could have a knock-on effect in wider communities, particularly with those with low vaccination rates. An increasingly noticeable trend in recent weeks is in that greater Minnesota, where vaccination rates are typically lower compared to the Twin Cities Metro, is now seeing the greatest number of cases and deaths from the virus. And the latest figures released, these are the earlier numbers I mentioned with the regular update, not the school update. Only 36.6% of the 2,874 new cases of COVID-19 came from the 7-county metro area. All right. Only 36.6%. Only 36.6. The 7-county metro area, that comprises 55.5% of the total population of the state of Minnesota, though. So only a small percentage technically is coming from the Twin Cities metro area. The rest of it's coming from outstate Minnesota. In last week's update, the Minnesota Department of Health had identified 95 schools where there are 5 more cases in COVID. Now there are 231, of which 105 are in the 7-county metro area. I did this last week, Brett. I'm going to do this again. I'm running them. I'm going to list off all the schools here. And I think it's important because there's a lot of schools that you may not know are on this list. And you should know where these cases are. Now, it's not necessarily that these schools have huge problems, but these are all the schools that have 5 more cases. 5 or more cases. And pretty much it hits every school district. It's getting close to it, at least. These are all in Anoka County. I'll run them all here for you. All of these in, well, I'll tell you what. Should we do the break? Let's do the break first. Let's do the break. I'll come back. I'll run all the schools. I got more of the coronavirus update. And then, once again, Republicans trying to stop most frontline workers from getting any kind of bonus for their sacrifice, especially after the Republicans last year demanded they get back to work. And Republicans think just putting up a sign saying, we appreciate you frontline workers, is all they needed. And the reality is, no, we got money. Let's give it to them. 952-946-6205, 952-946-6205. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Julie chiming in. People who can't get vaccinated and kids who aren't eligible should be treated like vaccinated patients. The other anti-vaxxers, sucks to be them if they get sick. Well, that's kind of where we're at right now. I mean, there's a lot of people who are now at the point where, you know what, we gave you a chance. you know, as if the same people, once again, and this is not religion for them, because if it was religion, then they would have always been against vaccinations, and they probably got their flu shot last year. They've probably been vaccinated multiple times, might even got, you know, a pneumonia shot, an HPV vaccination, a pneumonia vaccination recently. But now all of a sudden, because Trump has told us we have to hate this, and we basically have to, this is they're trying to control you. They're going to murder you with a vaccine. Well, now all of a sudden you're saying, it's my religion. No, it's not. No, and by the way, it can't be Christianity, because taking care of the sick was one of the things that Jesus said to do, which vaccines are right up his alley. You know, if you can prevent people from getting sick in the first place with a vaccine, that's exactly what he was telling us to do. So you guys are wacky crazy with your version, and it doesn't make any sense. But, you know, it's just, that's, you know, you're choosing to go down that path. You're choosing to do that. That's on you. And, you know, if you all of a sudden don't trust nurses, you don't trust doctors, and then you get sick, then why, may I ask, are you going to a hospital filled with the same people you just vilified a week earlier? Why? Why are you going there? Just stay home. You'll get through it in your own mind, in your own argument. You'll get through this without anyone else's help. All right. You've done the research. Off you go. Stay home. And at least don't take up the ICU beds and the rest of the emergency room that we need for the vaccinated patients, the patients who really can't get vaccinated for whatever reason, and the other healthcare emergencies we have going on. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. I want to get, once again, here are all the schools right now in the state where you have had at least 5 cases of COVID show up. In Anoka County, all these are in Anoka County. Andover Elementary, Anoka High School, Anoka Middle School for the Arts, Avail Academy in Blaine, the K-8 campus. Blaine High School, Blue Heron Elementary in Lionel Lakes, Cedar Creek Elementary School, Centennial High School, Centennial Middle School, Coon Rapids High School, Da Vinci Academy in Ham Link, Northdale Middle School, Pact Charter School, Park Terrace Elementary, Rice Lake Elementary, St. Francis High, St. Francis Middle, Sunrise Elementary, University Elementary. My gosh, is that pretty much every school in the Anoka County area? Dear Lord. In Beltrami County, Black Duck Secondary, Benton County, Riverview Intermediate School, Sauk Rapids Rice Middle School, Sauk Rapids Rice Senior High, in Blue Earth County, Mankato East Senior High, Mankato West Senior High. In Brown County, Jefferson Elementary, also New Ulm High School and New Ulm Middle School. Carver County, Bayview Elementary, Bluff Creek Elementary, Chanhassen High School, Chapel Hill Academy, Chaska Middle School, Southview Elementary, Southwest Christian High School, St. John's Lutheran School, Waconia High School, Waconia Middle School, Watertown Mayor High, Watertown Mayor Elementary School, Watertown Mayor Middle School. Aren't those all Scott Jensen's district? Yeah, that is, isn't it? That's where he's from. Yay, great advice, Doc. Cass County, Bena Middle School, Chippewa County, Montevideo Middle School, Chippewa South, the SWWC ELC in Montevideo. I have no idea what that is, but it's reporting at least 5 cases. Chisago County, North Branch Senior High, Taylor Falls Elementary, Clay County, Horizon Middle School, Moorhead High School, Robert Asp Elementary, SG Reinstern Elementary in Clay County, Clearwater County, Bagley Secondary, Crow Wing Brainerd Senior High, Crow Wing Eagleview Elementary, Forest View Middle School, Pequot Lakes Middle School, Pequot Lakes High School. Wow. Dakota, I'm just to the D's. Apple Valley Senior High in Dakota County, Cedar Park Elementary, Echo Park Elementary, Farmington High School, Hastings Middle School, Capsio Education Center, Meadowview Elementary, Pinewood Elementary in Eagan, also St. Croix Lutheran in Dakota County, Valley Middle School in Apple Valley, Woodland Elementary in Eagan. Wow. Dodge County, is it Kasan or Kasan?
That I'm not sure.
I think it's Quezon. Quezon Manterville Middle School, Quezon Manterville Senior High, Freeburn County Albert Lee High School. That was one of the first ones that had the problems. Also Halverson Elementary, Lakeview Elementary, Hennepin County. Let's run these. Anthony Middle School in Minneapolis, Barton Open Elementary in Minneapolis, Champlain Park High School in Champlain, Creek Valley Elementary in Edina, Dayton Elementary in Dayton, Eagle Heights Spanish Immersion in Eden Prairie, Earl Brown Elementary in Brooklyn Center, Edison Senior High in Minneapolis, Fernbrook Elementary in Maple Grove, Glen Lake Elementary in Minnetonka, Hmong International Academy in Minneapolis. That's why I've heard they had a lot of cases over there. Jackson Middle School in Champlain, Jefferson Elementary in Minneapolis, Kenny Elementary in Minneapolis, Maple Grove Middle School in Maple Grove, Maple Grove Senior High in Maple Grove, Marcy Open Elementary in Minneapolis, Minnehaha Academy, Mid and Lower Schools in Minneapolis, Minnetonka Senior High, Oak Point Elementary in Eden Prairie, Parnassus Preparatory School in Maple Grove, Peter Hobart Elementary in St. Louis Park, Providence Academy in Plymouth, Redeemer Christian Academy in Wayzata, Richfield Senior High, Armstrong Senior High, Robbinsdale Cooper Senior High, Rogers Senior High, Sanford Middle School, SB Marthana Christian Academy, Southwest High School, St. Charles Borromo and St. Anthony, St. John's Lutheran in Corcoran, Twin Cities International Schools, Washburn Senior High as well, Wayzata High School is in Plymouth, and the Weaver Lake Science Math Technology School in Maple Grove. Wow.
So many. It sounds like you're doing school closings during the winter.
Well, I mean, let me just ask you this. I mean, isn't this is pretty much on, you know, I would make an argument knowing which schools have the cases for people out there because, I mean, in this day and age, it's not like it used to be where kids used to come home, hear some paperwork from the school, and you'd see what was going on, or there's a call. And a lot of times it's emails, and, you know, some people aren't getting them. Or if you got, you know, parents who are divorced, and one parent's getting this, other parent's not. I mean, I think that there is a need for us to give this out here. Also, I should say, and ahead of pain, Yinghuao Academy in Minneapolis, Houston County, Caledonia Elementary, Caledonia, Houston Secondary in Houston, La Crescent Senior High, La Crescent Hoka Elementary, Spring Grove Secondary in Hubbard County, Nevis Elementary, Park Rapids Area Century Elementary, Cambridge Isanti High School, Itasca, Big Fork Elementary, Big Fork Secondary, Candy Yohai, MACCRAY East Elementary, Wilmer High School, Kuchiching Falls Elementary and International Falls, Falls Secondary, Little Fork, Big Falls Elementary, Lake of the Woods County has got Lake of the Woods Elementary in Baudette. So the entire state, I mean, we've got to cut the southern border, we've got the northern border now. Lyon County, Minneota Elementary, Minneota Secondary, in Marshall, Warren Elementary, Warren Alvardo Olzo Secondary, the Fairmont Elementary School in Martin County, Fairmont Junior High and Senior High, McLeod County, Hutchinson Middle, Hutchinson Park, Hutchinson Senior High, Hutchinson West Elementary, Meeker County, ACGC Secondary, Eden Valley Secondary, Malacca Elementary, Princeton Middle Schools, Morrison, Little Falls Senior High, I think it's Mauer County, actually. Austin Senior High, I.J. Holton Intermediate School, Sacred Heart in Adams, Southgate Elementary in Austin, Nicollet Senior High in Nicollet County, St. Peter High School in Nicollet, St. Peter Middle School as well, Olmsted, Bomber Valley Elementary, Bishop Elementary, Byron Primary, Century Senior High, Holy Spirit, John Adams Middle, John Marshall Senior High, Kellogg Middle, Longfellow Choice Elementary, Stuartville Middle, Sunset Terrace Elementary, Willow Creek Middle. That's all in Olmsted. All those in Olmsted. Ottertail, Heart of the Lake Elementary in Perham. Ottertail Viking Elementary in Pelican Rapids. Wow. Pennington, Franklin County, Franklin Middle School in Thief River Falls. Ramsey Community School of Excellence in St. Paul. The Hmong College Prep Academy in St. Paul. Matoska International in White Bear Lake, North Senior High in North St. Paul, Roseville Area Senior High, St. Anthony Park Elementary, White Bear North Campus Senior High, White Bear South Campus Senior High, in Red Lake, and those are all in Ramsey County, Red Lake County, Red Lake County Central High School, Redwood County Cedar Mountain Secondary, Redwood Valley Middle School, Redwood Walnut Grove Elementary, in Rock County, Laverne Senior High, Roseau County, Roseville Elementary, Roseau Elementary, St. Louis County. Well, this is probably going to be a long one. Well, no, not too many there. St. Louis County, the only one reporting is Northwood Secondary in Cook. Scott County, Eagleview in Elko, Falcon Ridge in New Prague, Jordan High School in Jordan, Jordan Middle School in Jordan, New Prague Middle School, New Prague Senior High, Raven Stream Elementary, Shakopee High School, Shakopee West in Scott County, and that's Shakopee West Middle School, all of those in Scott County. Sherburne County, Becker Middle School in Becker, Sherburne County, Spectrum High School in Elk River, Zimmerman in High School in Sherburne, Zimmerman Middle School in Stearns County, Avon Elementary, Eden Valley Elementary, Oak Hill Community Education in St. Cloud, Prince of Peace Lutheran School in St. Cloud, Ricori Senior High in Cold Springs, Sartell Middle School in Sartell, Sartell Senior High, Sauk Center Secondary, Technical Senior High in St. Cloud, Blooming Prairie Elementary in Steele County in Blooming Prairie, Owatonna Middle School, Owatonna Senior High, Washington Elementary, Wilson Elementary, all those in Steele County, Todd County, Long Prairie, Gray Secondary School, Wadena County, Sabika Secondary, the NRHEG Secondary, Waseca Junior High, Waseca High School, Washington County, Forest Lake Area Community Schools, Forest Lake Area High School, Montemita Senior High, Onika Elementary School, Park High School, Scandia Elementary School, Skyview Community Elementary, Stillwater Area High School, Wyoming Elementary, Wadawin County, St. Paul's Lutheran, Wilkin County, Rothsay Elementary, Winona County, Lewiston Altura Secondary, Winona Middle School, Wright County, Annandale Elementary, Buffalo Senior High, Delano West High School as well, Monticello Senior High, Prairie View Middle School, St. Michael Albertville Senior High, and Tatanka Elementary, the STEM school in Buffalo. There you go. I think that's it. Is it? That's it. Wow. Yes, that was a lot of schools to list off there. And where are all you anti-maskers that said it's not going to keep us safe to have a mask? And now we got chaos. Courtesy of you. Well, actually, I mean, to be fair, and I mean, this is what your excuse is going to be. You didn't make the policy. The school boards in these made the policy. It was the school boards that looked at a bunch of freaking screaming howler monkeys that were showing up for your school board meetings and said, well, that's effective counterpoint if you ask me. You're a school. You could have gone with science, math, I don't know. Pick your field. Instead, you went with the howler monkeys. And look at this, chaos. And all of a sudden, those howler monkeys aren't showing up to those school board meetings where all of a sudden there's a massive breakout in the school. All of a sudden, they're like, well, I was just making sure I met my point. I didn't set the policy. Because they're all freaking cowards. That's what they are. They're all freaking cowards. And now that we have a mess, they're just sitting and giggling at their success. You didn't want to be on a school board, then don't be on the school board. But when it comes time to make tough decisions, this isn't a tough decision. This isn't a tough decision. So do I keep the students and faculty safe or not? It's not like you're that drunk superintendent up in that one school district yesterday we were talking about. You're supposed to have some level of concern and care for the people in your school. This is not a tough choice. It is just, and now, here you go. Here's the latest. University of Minnesota Duluth student has filed a suit challenging the university system's COVID-19 vaccine mandate for all students. The lawsuit filed on Wednesday seeks an order halting the university's requirement that students in its five campuses be vaccinated by October 8th. The University Board of Regents and University President Joan Gable are named on the suit. The University of Minnesota may not unilaterally require new immunizations, said attorney Sam Deal, who is representing the student. He said in an email, President Gable's unlawful attempt to mandate student vaccines violates Minnesota's law and must not be enjoined. The university is not above the law. The university allows students to opt out of COVID-19 vaccine for medical or religious reasons. not just because I don't like it. I don't want to. I'm feeling a dicky. Donald Trump told me not to. Minnesota's college immunization law requires students to be immunized against most major childhood diseases before attending a university, while also allowing specific exemptions. So there's already a law in the book saying you have to be immunized. I want to hear your argument. Well, we're immunized on all that other stuff, all this stuff that we go, we're okay with that. It's just this new one is a bridge too far. I can't wait for this. I want to hear these arguments. University spokesperson Jake Ricker said in an email that you leaders still haven't served with a suit and therefore have not had a chance to review the details. TikTok, got to serve that suit. It's the 8th. Come on, you want this thing to go? I want to hear your argument. That said, we're confident in the operational decisions we have made regarding vaccinations in our community. Our actions reflect the high priority we place in creating safest, healthiest possible campus environment. People like this want to basically say no vaccines are ever needed. And then when the breakout happens at the UMD or at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities or one of the other campuses, all of a sudden, they're all of a sudden, why do you want me to make a comment? I'm not for kids against vaccines. They were the ones that the courts told them that they couldn't. It wasn't us. Yeah, the age of selfishness. God, is this a horrible time in this country? The age of selfishness. Selfishness is a virtue. You're just a bunch of pricks. Can I just say it? Can I say that on the air? Do I have to eat one of the Carolina Reaper pepper chips now? Just because?
Oh, I like that. Every time you say something controversial, Dad has to eat one of those chips. You won't make it through probably an hour of the show, would you?
I wouldn't make it through to the first break. The entire show would be me whimpering in the corner in the fetal position. Oh, God. No, it's not a conservative station, so we can't do that. Oh, damn. Another chip for Matt. All right. Here we are. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Yet even more on the Minnesota Coronavirus Update when we do return. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. Oh, I got a good point about why some businesses might be closing, especially restaurants and places like that. Coming up at the top of the next hour, Sven Sundgaard. And, of course, remember, it is Native Roots Radio. I Am Awake coming up with Robert Pilot and crew in the 6 o'clock hour. It is a sensational show. If you're not listening, you're wrong. Make sure you're staying with us throughout the afternoon right here on AM 950. I wanted to get to the big fight that's going on in regards to the GOP legislative leaders on Thursday unveiled their proposal to distribute $250 million pandemic bursts to nurses, first responders, correctional officers, long-term care workers, and hospice providers. They're still working on this. Cedric Frazier, the DFL from New Hope, says the proposal leaves out too many workers. This most recent public announcement by the GOP is nothing more than political posturing. It does not honor our frontline workers, he said in a statement on Thursday. What's basically going on is this. The Republicans only want this money to go to certain healthcare workers, not all the people they demanded get back to work last spring when the pandemic hit, such as delivery drivers, such as factory workers, such as grocery store employees. Those people were frontline workers that need to get back to work. That's what they said. That's what they were doing. And now it's time to say thank you by giving them a little bit of a bonus. They don't want to do it. Democratic legislators on the panel have favored a broader base of essential workers that would include meatpacking plant workers, janitorial staff, and daycare workers, among others. The panel missed a previous deadline to try to find agreement on this. Basically, one of the things that's stopping this as well is that the Republicans have to give the commitment that they're not in the Senate, that they're not going to remove Department of Health Commissioner Jan Malcolm. And that's apparently Republicans are refusing to say that we're not going to do that. Walz is saying, I'm not going to call a special session then because, you know, I want to guarantee that you guys are going to not basically do that. Some workers, including nurses, pushed back against the GOP plan, telling reporters that all kinds of essential workers, including food service workers and others who are undocumented immigrants, faced health risks. There's a whole range of people who worked through this pandemic and assumed risks, said Rachel Hanneman, a nurse who worked with COVID-19 unit in the now shuttered Bethesda Hospital in St. Paul. Janitor Troy Brauman was more pointed. I'm appalled at the decision made, he said, referring to the GOP plan. When government walls at the beginning of the pandemic labeled us as essential workers, he didn't give you a classification. He added, we all went out there and sacrificed our lives, which they did, as Republicans demand. But what Republicans keep thinking is, well, I went and bought a sign saying, thanks, essential workers. And me putting that sign out was all the bonus you needed. Bud. Amy Baldwin, a child care provider in Farmington, wrote a letter to the panel asking the workers like her be considered first life of the money. She said she had forgotten about the bonus pay after weeks of no update. If she were to get a check, though, she would keep it as extra security to carry a daycare if it was closed due to exposure. Yeah, you demanded daycare workers get into work. Remember that? Remember grocery store workers get back to work? Remember that? Remember meatpacking plant and factory workers get back to work? Remember that? Republicans, like, they want to basically try to find just one group who will go on out there. And I got to give credit to the one nurse who was out there saying, no. There was a lot of people that were frontline workers. You know, the Republicans went out there and they try their hardest to basically make it seem like they care about the worker by, you know, getting the police union on their side, or they dupe some idiot union into backing their plans. And then they act as though, see, we're for workers' rights, when you know as well as I do, they would kill every union if they got the chance. And they would. And here we are, after they demanded so many Minnesotans get back to work at the beginning of this pandemic because they were essential workers. Now all of a sudden it's time to show those essential workers a little bit of thanks by giving them a little bit of a bonus. And the Republicans are saying, yeah, not so much. We're not going to give it to you because we don't like you. That's all it is. We'll take a break. Hour two of the show up next. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It is the Matt McNeil Show. By the way, there was a news story here, and we can tie this back into the Minnesota coronavirus update really quick. And I want to make sure we point out the numbers, because I think it's very important with our media, who is so infatuated with howler monkey exhibits. And they, and once again, when you have the Star Tribune, when you have the news outlets always putting cameras on screaming lunatics talking about, I'm never going to take a vaccination, you know, that you get the impression that this is a popular movement. United Airlines, okay, they have 67,000 employees, 67,000. They put a vaccine mandate in place, okay, 67,000. 593 workers have refused a coronavirus vaccine, have not applied for an exemption or religious medical grounds, are now facing losing their jobs. I think they said that most of those actually had agreed to get vaccinated, and it was only 300 are refusing to get vaccinated, and they're going to end up getting fired, right, from United. That is an incredibly small portion. Let's just, you know, it's time for Matt's Math Corner. Let me pull up the calculator. Let's just say it's 400 people. All right, 400. Divided by 6,700 total. Yep, 67,000 actually. Equals, it's 0.5%. 0.5, not even 1%. 0.5%. It's not even a whole percentage point of their employee staff. That is all that's, it's basically, it's a fringe movement. And we have to remember that, because constantly the media always will go on out there and find these screaming howler monkey. They learned this back when McCain was running, when they started, you know, they put out lunatics screaming up birth certificates, and they learned the media is just there's someone screaming over there. Oh, get a camera over there fast. And there is a bad habit of people thinking that this is the majority, and it's not. It is a small minority that gets amplified by media who are just too damn lazy to do their job, or so overwhelmed in their jobs, they basically just say, I guess I'll just take the easy route.
You're asking people to put their money where their mouths is. All right, really? You're that anti-vax that you're willing to lose your job, probably your health insurance? whatever other benefits you get.
Was it? It was the Onion headline yesterday. When the nurse weighs difference of keeping job with a vaccination or losing job and dying. Which one should I do? Okay, you're really good luck with that choice. All my best. I can't wait for them when, you know, if they do survive this and this whole thing is over and they maybe lift this saying, hey, I got vaccinated. Can I get my job back now? Shh, don't say anything to anyone, though. Don't say anything to anyone. So I had another note that gave me a thought process on another reason why businesses are having a hard time getting employees. Now, this is specific to restaurants. And this morning, I actually saw one of the coffee shops, one of the major chains, shut down, which I thought that was the first time I've seen that. And once again, unemployment is not skyrocketing. This is not about people refusing to go back to work. Unemployment is actually doing pretty well. It's just that people are finding other jobs and basically saying, I'm not going to go work in retail or in the service industry or, you know, for crud wages and no benefits and no safety precautions in regards to coronavirus. And I never put this out there. I put this out there as a major reason, but I get this note. He worked for a restaurant. He says 3 years earlier, he remembered the first night they actually had more delivery app orders than actual people coming into the restaurant to pick up food or sit down and eat. It was a sit-down restaurant. And he said one of the things that he loved about his job was interacting with people. And since that point, it was almost, it got overwhelming that the vast majority of their work was not working with people, was kind of the, as he said, kind of the Model T Ford factory thing where they were just stamping out orders, getting them into boxes and trying to find a delivery driver there was no interaction with the people. And he said that actually was what killed the industry for him and why he quit and he didn't go back, is that all the fun of working in a restaurant, of interacting with people, was gone because it's all, you know, most of the food that you get today is delivery services. And I can tell you, Brett, there have been a few times I've gone into restaurants on a Friday or a Saturday night, and I'm like, where is everybody? And there's eight guys sitting out there with DoorDash and Uber Eats and all those guys, and there's plenty of seats available in a restaurant. I have never seen anything but jam-packed full.
And another point, too, talking about DoorDash, those are really not a good deal for the restaurants either. So if they're getting a lot of their orders from there, that's also a big financial hit for them.
That could be one of the reasons why they can't offer more money. Or, you know, they'll have to raise their food rates. I think that there is something to that. I know people that like serving. I know one or two people that work in some of the really high-end restaurants, and they take a lot of pride in that, and they enjoy that. Now, those aren't the restaurants where they're having problem finding servers. It's in the kind of the borderline ones, and I shouldn't say borderline. It should be, you know, kind of the fast food industry, because I mean you get that now a lot, DoorDash and stuff at most of the fast food restaurants, the coffee shops, the Caribou's and stuff like that. But then all those mid tier restaurants. If you are working at a restaurant and you're working there because you like human interaction, well, it seems to be going the wrong way, and it seems to, you know, you seem to be getting a lot less of that. And it's under the idea, I mean, and it's not a shame. I mean, I'm not bringing this up to try to shame people into going into restaurants. I mean, this is just the world that we're living in. And clearly these delivery services, considering there's like 500 of them now and they're all packed to the gills and that's all you see, is they're wildly popular. But it's kind of one of those things where, I mean, will you be able to survive this? I mean, the pandemic is one thing. Crud wages is one thing. The pandemic is universal. Crud wages, well, it depends on the facility. It depends on the business. Some businesses are trying to offer better rates. It's the benefits, which is another thing, which some restaurants do offer benefits, some don't. But if you're there because of the human interaction and you've just basically become a factory line worker, basically putting out product as quickly as you can, it seems to me that that's a problem. He did also go on to add, I should mention, he did also mention that it seems like the people that do come into restaurants now are kind of the angry people. They're the ones that basically make orders difficult and make, you know, it's, they'll send food back and it's not a lot of fun. The regulars, he says, it's when you see, when you haven't seen regulars that used to show up every week and they haven't been in for months because they're getting food delivered now, that tells you a lot right there.
I never get why you would be mean to a food server or anyone that cooks you your food for you. That doesn't seem like a good idea because they're in control of what you're eating.
Well, wasn't it, where was it? Was it Mother's Day at the Red Lobster and the woman was just, remember what that story we had? The poor woman, it was down to like six staff members and the woman was like saying, "Where's my cheddar bay biscuits?" You know, like, I'm sorry. It's where it's going. It's where it's going. I don't know. I mean, it is going to be interesting to see. I went to, my wife and I went out to a restaurant this weekend. It was fairly busy. But it wasn't packed. And for a Friday night, I'd been in that place on a Friday night before. It had been packed. And there was not, there I'd say at least a third of the tables were open. But there was a line out the door of guys waiting with their heating bags, waiting to get food and take it over to someone. It doesn't taste as good. Can I just say that? I mean, I get to go food sometimes and it's like this, but if I have the choice of, if I have the time to sit down in a restaurant, I'd rather do that.
I would never order from DoorDash or Grubhub or any of those things, but just because they're late. It's a bad deal for the restaurant.
Oh, it's a bad deal for the restaurants. If I'm going to order food to go, I order it through the restaurant and I go pick it up.
Exactly.
And then I can tip them there and I know that's going to get there. So.
Oh, and Grubhub, DoorDash, yeah, you might get the food 3 hours later and it's going to be cold anyway, so then there's that.
And this is, I'm not necessarily dogging on delivery people. I know you're out there working, and once again, we just talked about essential workers, but I'm just saying that this is, if you're wondering why restaurants are closing, I think that, you know, if all it is, I mean, most restaurant people like making food for other people. They don't want to just sit there and run an assembly line of meals that you're putting into plastic boxes and some guy that you don't really know is taking them away and you're getting, what, 75% on the sale that you usually would get. Or what is it nowadays? Do we know?
I think it's even more than that.
Is it more than that?
I think
like
there's
90?
A difference. If the restaurant themselves are doing the delivery, that's a little bit different than using those third-party apps. Then I think you're okay going delivery. But, yeah, those apps, I'd stay away from those.
952-946-6205. Interesting thought. I will say, too, childcare. A lot of people, since we brought that up, a lot of people have said, what's the point if I'm working three jobs just to get the money to put my kids in daycare and I can just quit those jobs and I can take, and it's basically an at even rate. Why am I doing it? I'll stop work and I'll stay at home with my kids. It's a valid point. It's a very valid point. 952-946-6205. St. Cloud State wrestler accused of assaulting another Huskies student athlete who'd come outside to check on things after his hearing a woman scream. Isaiah Gomez Oropiza, 20, was charged Thursday with third-degree assault. Now, I got a big problem with that only being the charge, third-degree assault. I'll get to that in a second. Causing substantially bodily harm, the charges against the Burnsville native picked up the victim, identified by the family as 20-year-old Chadwick Waldorp, threw him to the ground, then punched him even after he'd fallen unconscious. Once again, this is a 284-pound wrestler picking up another guy and throwing him down, knocking him unconscious, and beating him afterwards. The attack happened in the early hours of September 18th outside of Waldorp's residence on the 700 block of 8th Street South in St. Cloud. Witnesses' accounts and surveillance video suggest Gomez Oropiza had begun arguing with a 20-year-old woman on the sidewalk nearby, with the wrestler attacking Waldorp after he came out to see what was going on, according to the charges. Waldorp, a swimmer for the Huskies, suffered numerous facial fractures, with an emergency room doctor describing his face as a jigsaw puzzle. He will have to undergo reconstructive surgeries, the first of which was done this week to realign his jaw. He's on a liquid diet, as several metal bars are currently affixed to his upper and lower gums. What kind of psychopath does this? Gomez Oropiza is listed as a 285-pound sophomore from Burnsville, who went to Rosemont High School, the university prior to criminal charges being filed, said the student believed to have been involved and was suspended from the team pending an investigation. He made his first court appearance on Thursday in an omnibus hearing set for December 16th at 11 a.m. According to the criminal complaint, Waldorp told investigators he'd arrived home and heard a woman scream. He went outside to check and asked loudly if everything was all right. "Mind your own blanking business," said Gomez Oropeza. He then turned around, then heard footsteps and was tackled before falling unconscious. Witness accounts and surveillance video from a nearby building provide additional details. A witness said they'd been awake in their bedroom at the time and looked out the window after hearing a woman yell. They said Gomez Oropeza was hitting a fence and looked angry. They then saw Waldorp emerge from his residence and approach Gomez Oropeza and his female colleague, though not in a confrontational manner. The witness then watched Gomez Oropeza punch Waldorp three or four times, including after he was on the ground. So the guy didn't come out in a confrontational manner, and this guy, this thug, basically beat him, destroyed his face. Surveillance video shows the assault lasted only about 5 seconds, though, with Gomez Oropeza lifting Waldorp from the sidewalk, then throwing him to the ground before starting to punch him. The woman Gomez Oropeza had been with yelled, "Why would you do that?" Surveillance video, which corroborates a witness's account, then shows the woman immediately go to help Waldorp. After the attack, Gomez Oropeza knocked on the door where Waldorp lived. She said he'd knocked out their friend. Then he carried Waldorp to the door. Waldorp's roommates say that he stumbled in bloody and incoherent. When officers arrived, he was reluctant to seek medical care, but eventually relented. Officers who responded to the scene found Gomez Oropeza and the 20-year-old woman walking nearby. He initially said nothing happened, but eventually admitted to punching Waldorp, claiming it was self-defense after Waldorp continued to come after him. Lying sack of crap you are. Gomez Oropeza said he did not have a knife, but did have a gun. So he did not have a knife, but did not have a gun, so I hit him. That's what he said. He was arrested on Tuesday after investigators obtained witness accounts and their surveillance video. I still, for the life of me, don't know why it took you all that time to get there. But can I just say this? Let's go back to the charges here. The charge is third-degree assault, right? And that's the only charge is that you're going to that was third-degree assault causing substantial bodily harm. Okay. He lied to investigators. What was his initial statement there? That he had not done anything? And then all of a sudden he said he was being attacked? He was being attacked? The story does come out. He apparently did not break into the house, which was the initial report, that he went broke in the house and threw Waldorp in there. But at the same time, he then fled the scene of the crime. You can't just assault someone and then walk away. He fled the scene of the crime. I'm sorry. This guy needs to go to jail for a long time. And let's also be just bluntly honest. He clearly needs a medical evaluation. He does not seem to be mentally right. That this is how you solve problems in the world. Is this what you teach this kid? This kid's going to be in the business office someday, and some guy's going to say, "Oh, I heard a loud noise. Is everything okay? Mind your own effing business." And then all of a sudden jump on the guy, knock him unconscious, throw them to the ground, and then punch him a few times in the face? Because that's not what normal human beings do. That's what psychopaths do. And this guy seems to have done this, allegedly. It just seems to me, once again, this entire case seems to be a case of candy coating the way that the assailant was treated, the investigation, and even the charges now, because there's an athlete involved and he was a really good wrestler. I mean, come on, man. Now, he's a broken individual who basically nearly murdered a man with his bare fist. And by the way, where's the attempted murder charge? Because I think you can make an argument that he tried to do that. Attempted murder. Fleeing the scene of a crime. Lying to a police officer. Where are those charges? Shouldn't those charges be involved here? 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. Maybe that's the reason why you get your kids into sports today, is apparently that if they ever commit a crime, they basically are never going to be treated as harshly as a regular citizen would. Because, hey, they do sports. 952-946-6205. Let's take a break. Come on back. It's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. I don't know if she is advising this because she has seen the damage done, but Sandra, on watching the Facebook stream, says, men, wash your hands thoroughly before going to the bathroom if you have done the one chip challenge. Okay. Obviously, I think we can take this as be careful of sensitive areas after the one chip challenge. If you don't know what we're talking about, you go back and listen to the last hour. We'll have it up on podcast a little bit later on.
Maybe hundreds of people just did your advice and thought, I'm getting rid of COVID and I'm going to...
I did not give that advice.
I thought you did. Oh, you didn't.
I did knee-jerk a joke about, well, since they're willing to put horse dewormer up their backside, maybe they'll take one of these Carolina Reaper chips and put one of them up there.
You'll burn the COVID away.
You will not.
Oh, you will not. Okay.
We have been advised by our legal staff here that that is not true. I don't know if they tested it themselves. I did hear some howls from the legal department here at AM 950 Radio. But they have said, no, you cannot cure COVID by inserting a Carolina Reaper chip into your backside. You cannot do that. So don't do that. We're officially stating that's our position. I would make an argument you don't want to put it in any of your orifices. I'm just, you know, if you ever want to eat something normal ever again. But hey, different strokes. 952-946-6205. I didn't think I was going to be using the word orifices today, but there you go. Prosecutors will seek a more severe sentence of the man accused of shooting and killing a youth baseball coach on Highway 169 earlier this summer if he's convicted. In a court filing, attorneys for the state alleged that 33-year-old Jamal Smith pointed guns at other motorists for minor reasons while driving in the weeks and months before he allegedly shot Jay Botten in July. In fact, prosecutors say Smith showed a gun to five other vehicles in the hours before the alleged crime. Smith of Chicago is charged with second-degree murder. He was arrested in Illinois months after the shooting. In court documents filed on Wednesday, prosecutors said they will seek an upward sentencing departure for Smith based on three factors. The crime was committed in the presence of a child. As Botten saw, a son was in the car when he was shot. Smith's alleged conduct created a greater than normal danger to the safety of their people on the roadway. And the fact that, if convicted, this would be Smith's third violent crime. Prosecutors said Smith is a dangerous offender and that he's always carried a gun, according to witnesses. Botten, 56, was driving home July 6 with his son after coaching a youth baseball game, got into an altercation with another driver on 169 in Plymouth. The driver shot him in the head. Botten lost control of his car, crashing several other vehicles into a nearby apartment complex parking lot. His 15-year-old son performed CPR on him until paramedics arrived on the scene. He was taken to North Memorial, where he died. He also faces a charge of aiding an offender after the fact. His bail has been set at $2 million. When you read this story, and I want to go back to the wrestler story, if I can, for a quick second. I don't think that there is, in my perception, just the way I perceive things, and both these people are alleged. They have the right to their trial. They'll go to court. They'll have their legal defense. They have the right to do that. But in both of those cases, I don't see much difference in between the two of them, if you want to know the truth. And I know some people say, well, Matt, the one guy, the wrestler, he just punched the guy a few times. He was out of control and violently attacked him. He knocked him out and then kept punching him in the face over and over, a completely defenseless individual. And then lied about how he was being confrontational. No, he basically was broken. He was mentally broken and went out and just attacked some guy. this shooter, I mean, how is he not mentally, I mean, just as well, mentally broken that you go on out there and you think it's normal to aim guns at people because that they didn't give you the proper amount of space to merge your vehicle onto a road or something. They didn't use a turn signal or something. And there's a real disconnect here. And I'm not saying that either of these individuals should not be found guilty if their trial comes to that because of, you know, they're mentally unstable or mentally, you know, a mental issue. But I'm saying that these people, their compromised mental state definitely did cause them to, in one case, shoot a person on the highway, in another case, beat a man within an inch of his life. And so where I can commend I think it's the Plymouth Police Department. I don't know who's running that case, Plymouth Police Department. I commend them on the due diligence to actually track down the full story here and get the proper charges filed in that case. I still have the question is, okay, I can already point to the story that you just told. It's like, why did you not charge him with lying to a police officer? Why did you not charge him with fleeing the scene? And why did you not charge him with attempted murder? Because it sure seems like he was trying to do attempted murder there. And you can say, well, he's just too good. It was a bad mistake. Yeah. Were you near? Okay. A bad mistake was screaming at your girlfriend. Then another bad mistake was charging at this guy unprovoked and knocking him out. And then another bad mistake was deciding to punch him multiple times. And then another bad mistake was lying about what actually transpired. And another bad mistake is in you leaving the scene of the crime. I don't know about you, but I'm sorry. I think that you have to start throwing the books at people when they do this sort of thing. And the problem is I think that where we get to a point where we're looking for charges to be filed in a case like the shooting on 169, and we say, okay, at least we're getting proper charges. If when it's an athlete involved, it seems like once again, well, we really can't go to the fullest extent of the law. Why can't you? Because I don't think that there's too much difference in the mindset of the individuals between those two. That's just me. But I don't think that there's too much of a difference in between the two of them. They both seem to be broken at the core, and they feel as if violence is the way to solve their problems. 952-946-6205. 952-946-6205. A man who probably could ace the Carolina Reaper Pepper Challenge on his own, Sven Sundgaard, will be kind enough to join us in just a moment. We'll change up things and get into the weather forecast with him. It is the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. It's the Matt McNeil Show. Sven Sundgaard is the exceptional weatherman. You'll find him at bringmethenews.com, at YouTube, as well as also Premier Living. If you're not over there and subscribed and watching those great updates he does over there, you're wrong. He's kind enough to join us on a Thursday to talk about the weather. Hey, Sven.
Hey, yeah, I have to correct you. We've changed things a bit, so it's a little easier to find my weather page now.
Okay.
So the URL that will direct there is forecast is sold, because this is a real estate combination thing. And then forecastissold.com/weather, and that'll take you to my weather page.
Forecastissold.com, right?
/weather.
Got it. All righty.
There you go. That's easier, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And I'll make sure I'll find it. I'll put the link up on the social media pages a little bit later so everyone else can find it pretty easily as well.
Yeah, we literally just changed it today, so.
Well, I didn't get the departmental memo.
I know. I should have told you before.
That's okay. Hey, I was shocked today. I was driving down the road. What was that coming out of the sky? It was a little rain, a few drops of rain coming down.
You must have been in the West Metro.
Yes.
Yeah, you were one of the only ones. Basically, the western part of the state has had on and off downpours through the afternoon. And yeah, they just kind of clipped the western and northwestern suburbs. But where I am in downtown Minneapolis, it's just gotten cloudy, but the sun's back out now. We haven't had a drop of rain.
Oh, I actually watered my plants earlier today because as you've been talking about on your weather forecast, it has been you know, shockingly warm and shockingly dry, and things are still growing. I mean, they're starting to change. Things are starting to change now. It's that even though we're into October, they seem to know, I think, with the amount of sunlight they're getting, it's the gig's up. But still, I got a lot of things that are still growing.
Yeah, totally. You know, a lot of people have asked me, like, hey, I still have peppers on the plants or tomatoes. And like I say, tomatoes always look kind of scraggly at this point, no matter what, because drier air, you know, every single thing that has to photosynthesize can tell that our sun angle is half of what it was, or not quite half, but definitely much less than the summer months. So they know, despite the summer temperatures, they're not fooled like maybe us humans are. But yeah, this front that's bringing the clouds and the showers to the west is literally the edge of a reality check. So our streak of 80s probably will be coming to an end here after today.
You made the point early this week that as nice as this is, it is wildly not normal. And you brought in your weather forecast yesterday. You had said September, I think, is up to the 16th warmest September on record. Yeah. And that was up from like 28, 29 the last time you did an update on that. And it brings up an interesting point. As a guy that is focused your life on weather, it's just, I have noticed on this show, I'll talk about, wow, the weather, the climate's broken. We've got a broken climate. And a lot of people say, well, but it's a nice day. And you're like, yeah, but it's not. I mean, how do you address that when you look at someone who says, oh, it's a nice day. It's 80 degrees in October as we get ready to go into October. And you look at them and it's like, but that is so abnormally wrong. We should not be enjoying that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I posted yesterday, it was at one point when it was 84 degrees. And the other thing, too, about the last couple of days is we've actually had some humidity too, which is almost more bizarre than the temperatures. You know, normally when it's warm in late September, October, it's that very dry heat. So to have dew points in the 60s, this is very late for that, to have some humidity. And that's partly why some of these downpours to the west are going to create some 1-2 inch rainfall amounts this evening and tonight. Not something you normally see out of an almost October kind of shower. But yeah, I think the way that I do it is, as you've seen the last couple of weeks and all my weather, I pretty much have a climate change angle in every single forecast. And I think, you know, whether you're on TV or writing or you're digital, it's kind of the responsibility of meteorologists to remind people, yes, this feels nice. You know, and I tweeted yesterday when it was 84, I'm like, I love this weather. I am a summer kid, but I'm like, it does feel bad that it is, you know, way too late for this to be happening. And it would be more enjoyable if this wasn't a climate change thing. This is the latest streak of 80s. Today marks 3, and it is possible we could hit 4th tomorrow. Earlier in the week, it didn't look like we'd be in the 80s tomorrow, but it's going to be very close. We might hit 80 barely if we can squeeze out enough peaks of sun. But regardless, to have 3 80s or more, you got to go back 10 years since we've had a streak like this. So this is late. September, obviously, we do get some warm temperatures, but it is almost October, and this is getting to be a little absurd, though not as absurd as the point I was talking about 10 years ago. October of 2011 had 8 days in the 80s. Wow. In the first half of October. That was a new record then, and peaked at 88 degrees. So that's some crazy heat in October. But yeah, this is not normal to have this late.
Yeah, pumpkins rotting because of the heat is not a good look. It's not a good look.
No.
I want to mention, as you bring up the climate change, one of the things that you do point out is that in Minnesota, at least certain parts of it, it has led to more snow because it has been, you know, once again, even though it's warming up, it's actually warming up to a point where it can snow more.
Yeah, and this is one of those, it seems counterintuitive climate change angles, but not really in a place like Minnesota. So the map you're referring to that I showed yesterday showed the difference in the old 30-year normals, which is 1981 to 2010, to the new ones, which is 1991 to 2020. That we just are starting to roll out this year. And for most of Minnesota, there's a slight increase in snow. And that is a trend. If we look at compared to the historical average, almost all of our winter months are getting snowier. But it's not translating to snow depth because, as we know, we're having these wild swings where you get 5 days in the 40s in January and you melt most of your snowpack. So snowpack is not dependable, but we are getting more snow because a warmer atmosphere holds more water vapor. And, you know, one of the months that is increasing the most in snow, February. What is a normal February like in Minnesota historically? you know, it's cold late January to February. It's just usually cold, consistently cold. And you only get those Alberta clippers that give you 1, 2, 3 inches of snow. You don't get the big storms normally in February. Climatologically, February is our least snowiest winter month. But that's changing. It is getting snowier because now we're in the storm track more. We're more like what Chicago or Des Moines used to be, you know, where we would see storms go to the south but not hit us because we're just, oh, look, Minnesota, it's 0 degrees. Mm-hmm. That's changing.
Oh, good.
It's a couple weeks. Yeah.
At least we get precipitation, I guess. You've always challenged forecasts, like long-term forecasts about what we're going to get. You have always been one of them saying it's very difficult to make these predictions. I saw one this week that just made me chuckle. Apparently, catch this, Minnesota will see some potential of some snow showers and colder temperatures this winter. I know that's outrageous, but that was the actual prediction that they put out. And I'm like, okay, where's your prediction? I could say that, and the sun's going to come up too. I mean, it's not much of a prediction, really. I think it's almost kind of taking what you said. It's so hard to predict this. You can only they've taken the most generic route they can, and then they can claim success.
Yeah, you know, and I reposted it, but with a couple paragraphs explaining why it was ridiculous and some climate stuff. And I shouldn't have done that because on Facebook it got like 400 clicks. So people clicked the AccuWeather forecast for the winter forecast. I'm like, no, that was not the point. But yeah, you know, and the point I made is it's bold to if you're predicting below normal temperatures, which I did dig into it and looked at their forecast for the upper Midwest and Great Lakes, and they're forecasting a colder than normal, at least midwinter. And I'm like, that's bold. That's because only 1 in 4 winters of the last 20 years have been actually below normal. So you don't even have to look at a computer model. You don't have to stick your finger in the air. Just by looking at the statistics, 3 out of 4 times you're going to be right by just forecasting a warmer winter because it's just warmer now. You know, when we do get cold like we did this last February, it seems dramatic, but that is very rare. And again, that cold didn't really break any records. It was good old fashioned February cold that we just haven't had in a long time. And as we've talked about, long-term forecasts are difficult to make anyway. My write-up this evening that is already out there, but I'll post it too, on my forecastisold.com/weather, page. I barely talk about the rain coming. It's something to talk about, but I mostly talk about some October predictions based on looking at what happened this last month of September and some of those trends. And there's really no reason to think that October is not going to be another very mild month. In fact, one of our longer term models that we use for those month to month or seasonal forecasts is forecasting temperatures that'll be more than 5 degrees above normal this October, which if that happened, that could be a top 10 or 15 October. But it'll be similar to like what we saw this summer, where it's not like we get a bunch of extreme days. So don't look for 90 degrees in October, but it's the consistent warmth. That's been the thing that we've seen since June 1st is just consistent warmth with, yes, some extremes, but not crazy stuff, not 100 degrees. And maybe we won't even hit 80 in October, but we'll pull off a very warm month by that consistent warmth. October should mostly be in the 50s to low to mid 60s. That's where about 70% of the numbers should fall for high temperatures. And I think this October, it's mostly going to be 60s and some 70s and maybe a couple of 50 degree days, which is, you know, definitely higher than the curve for that month.
I remember the first time I had to mow my lawn in November. And I said, wow,
this could be one of those years. You know,
I was like, this is, it almost seems like every year now I'll rake and then I have to mow. It's that's how you get stuck with this. As you bring that up, I mean, I think you had said a few weeks ago that 2021 was looking, I think it's like the 9th warmest year on record, but where we're tracking, is there a chance we can move up?
I haven't updated it yet. It may have moved up now after September. We're getting to that point in the year where, obviously 3/4 of the data is behind us, so it's harder to move the needle a little bit. Mm-hmm. But as you mentioned, a couple weeks ago, we were looking at September maybe being the 21st warmest, and now the 16th. I mean, 5 place rankings for 1 month is a big deal. So it is, in fact, actually our 4th warmest month this year when you look at compared to normal and in the rankings. Mm-hmm. June was the 2nd hottest ever. March was the fourth warmest March ever, and then January was our 12th warmest January ever. So 16th warmest for September puts it in the number four spots of our months. And our seventh consecutive month, by the way, of warmer than normal temperatures. Only February this year has been the one month that was cooler than normal because of that 10-day cold spell.
You and I also have a tendency of jumping on the tropic stuff. Sam, which is a monster hurricane, but doesn't really seem like it's going to affect too many people, at least on a landfall issue, is going. We also now have Victor. We're almost out of names now. We got one name left on the list.
Yeah, it's not a fun problem to have either. Mm-hmm. Not just from a clerical standpoint, but this happened last year too. And I think we got to get used to, they used to go to the Greek alphabet. Now we just use another list because this is becoming the new normal. They used to say, oh, if we ever run out, we'll go to Greek names. And that would happen once every 10 years. Well, now it's happening a lot more. So we have to actually have something a little bit better in place. But yeah, Sam looks like it's going to pass just east of Bermuda. So that's one possible place it would have affected, but it looks like it's going to go east there as a major hurricane. It is a strong hurricane. And Victor is just too far out to really know where it'll go yet, but it looks like it'll follow even a better path than Sam and had literally kind of cut through the middle of the Atlantic. So yeah, while these two storms aren't threatening to the U.S. mainland, they are threatening in terms of just showing how active the season is, how warm the waters are still that we're able to get these rapidly developing storms. Not forecasting Victor to become a hurricane, though it is expected to stay as tropical storm, so that's good news. But as you mentioned, yeah, we're getting pretty close to the end of the list, and we still have all of October and half of November to get through with hurricane season.
Well, and yeah, it's there, and I think we've been lucky, just the way that all these storms now just seem to be going and skipping past the East Coast. But I think at some point this is going to turn, and they're going to start coming back in towards the U.S.
Yeah, we talked about this last week. It all depends. It depends on several things, but one of the big things we look at is that Bermuda high. When it's weaker, it tends to allow things to kind of rotate around it more. But when it's stronger, it literally pushes the tracks out to the south and west, and that's when we get into the Caribbean and into the U.S. mainland. But right now, we just are lucky that that high is a little weaker. But, like any high or low pressure, they fluctuate from day to day, week to week. So we'll just have to watch what that trend is through the month of October. I do want to mention one thing, because I should have told you this earlier. I want to say, roll the tape. But you remember last week when we talked and I said, hey, you're seeing a lot of forecasts out there that say it's going to be in the 70s next week, and I think we're going to see a lot more 80s. Do you remember that?
Yes, you did say that.
Okay, good. So we had out of the last 5 days, four of them have been 80-plus. I just want to make sure that we recall that.
I do not think any other weatherman in the Twin Cities made that statement. You did. He's the best. This is the guy. He's got all the information. He's got the science behind it too, which is that's why I trust you with the weather. That's for sure. The weather.
Just trust me with the weather. Nothing else. Weather and real estate, but nothing else. Not your children or anything else.
No, he doesn't do a good omelet. Don't ask him. Just don't ask him.
Actually, I do, but yeah. That's okay. And I did babysit my 2-year-old niece this afternoon without any incidents. So I guess I am actually pretty well around trustworthy.
Beautiful. Well, I will say we've talked about the leaves, when this is going to start changing. Just the last 4 days, it's and once again, I think it just goes into the amount of sun they're getting. The plants just know I've started seeing some really great color around the Twin Cities.
Well, and we finally had some cold nights. That was something that was really lacking. Is we hadn't been below 50 degrees. Remember, that was the thing we were talking about the last couple of weeks, is MSP still hasn't been below 50. And that's, for whatever reason, that seems to be a trigger point for trees once you get more of those cold nights. And we just had our first one that was just a little more than a week ago. So last Wednesday morning, we had our first 40, and then we had four in a row. So that, I think, is what really helped to trigger. Obviously the daylight is one factor, but our last cold morning was the 25th, so 5 days ago. It was 44 degrees. That's legit chilly, like September should be. And so I think that really helped to shake up those trees, because then of course you get outside of the urban heat island. If it was 44 at MSP, it was 39 or 40 in a lot of those outer suburbs.
Well, and so let me ask. I mean, let's get the weather here for the weekend here. What are we looking at? Are we having a chance to go out and look at some of these beautiful leaves?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a bad weekend. Friday really never through the week looked like a total washout, but it even looks less so now. I mean, we do need the rain to, you know, go back to the start of our conversation. This is what's kind of concerning me, that we've made some real progress on the drought, but we seem to be like in these spits and spurts, you know, and then we go into these 2 weeks of pretty dry and abnormally warm weather, which dries things out again. The one thing going for us, though, you know, not just fall color, but weak sun angle does help to dry the soils out, you know, much less than in that very strong midsummer. But scattered showers, maybe a thunderstorm tomorrow. So if you are going to be out and about, you're going to want an umbrella or just be prepared to dodge some showers. But we're not looking at any all-day rain or like an all-morning rain or anything like that, but just hit and miss scattered showers, kind of like what Western Minnesota has been seeing today, but less intense. And then that could linger into tomorrow night. And then Saturday, we're looking at more of these instability kind of showers where we might have some sun in the morning, but as we start to see this cooler air move in, any peak of sunshine will produce some clouds and then some pop-up showers. But those will be pretty isolated or spotty. Nothing really to, you know, cancel any plans. But again, maybe have an umbrella handy if you're going to be out Saturday. But otherwise, the weekend looks good. Sunday, probably the nicer day. Low to mid 70s both Saturday and Sunday, which is cooler, but the normal high now is 66, so that's still above that. Mm-hmm. And it looks like we were looking like we might actually see some highs in the 60s next week for a couple days. Now I don't think we do. It looks like we stay in the 70s for our first full week of October. So again, hard to complain about. It's very pleasant, but once again, we're just starting another month that is at least to start very warm. And another thing I want to say, I don't know if we have time to talk about it, but they can look at this on my forecast that I updated online. I look at, you know, depending upon how warm October is from normal, what impact that has on the date of your first frost, which a lot of people have been asking me, hey, when are we going to finally see a frost, or when should I blow out my sprinklers? You know, normally you would do that by now because you just didn't take chances, but as things have gotten warmer. So there's some interesting trends there about how much later does our frost get when you warm up October 3 degrees, 4 degrees, 5 degrees, for example.
Forecastissold.com/weather. Forecastissold.com/weather. Of course, also bringmethenews.com at YouTube as well. Sven Sundgaard. Sven, thank you very much. I appreciate it as always, my friend.
You bet. Enjoy the weekend.
You too. Take care. We'll take a break. Come on back. Wrap the show. When we do return, it's the Matt McNeil Show right here on AM 950. More people chiming in that if they do, people do this one chip challenge. Apparently, some people have said, ask me where this is at, where I took the picture of the one chip challenge, because their store is sold out of the one chip challenge. Man, you want to go to the garage and take a ball peen hammer and just start whacking away at the old crotch area. I mean, that's about the same exact feeling you're going to get.
I miss the days of the old Tide Pod Challenge. Whatever happened to that instead?
Oh, hey, back in my day when we weren't eating laundry stuff. Oh, God. So, and once again, if you missed the first hour, go back, listen to it on SoundCloud. It's a Carolina Reaper Pepper chip. It is a one-chip challenge. Apparently, this company has put out one single chip. But I'm going to say don't do it, because clearly it's not about flavor. It's not about the quality of the chip. No one's going to eat this and say, well, that was a tasty chip. No one is going to do this. It is going to annihilate your mouth. It says on the actual warning, not for pregnant women. This will make you cry. And then for God's sakes, if you actually do this, you had better scrub your hands hard. And once again, because the legal team is making me say this, if you're an anti-vaxxer looking for your next miracle cure for coronavirus, do not jam the one-chip challenge up your nether regions. Native Roots Radio is up next. Till tomorrow.
Hi, my name is...